Thank you for staying with us into the second half hour of our program this morning on WDEV FM and AM. A programming note for you folks out there. Common Sense Radio, Bill Sayre, normally airs at 11 a.m. We're not going to be doing that this morning. Instead, we are going to go to live coverage of a news conference with Governor Phil Scott, who is going to be speaking with the media at 11:15. So stay tuned to WDEV for all the latest updates on the coronavirus crisis and the various responses to it from the state and federal officials. Here on the Dave Graham Show, we've been trying to cover a lot of different aspects of how people are responding to the situation, unprecedented situation going on here in Vermont and, of course, around the world, really. In this next segment of the show, we're going to be speaking with Sandy Rouse. She is the CEO of Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice. And another guest, Jill Maza Olson, joins me as well. She is the executive director of the statewide group of visiting nurse associations around Vermont, of which Sandy's organization, CVHHNH, is one. And I believe I have both folks on the phone with me this morning. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me, Sandy and Jill.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
And Sandy, let me start with you, if I could. I had Monica Hutt from the Department of Aging or the Disabilities, Aging, and Independent Living on first half hour of the program this morning, and we were talking a little bit about kind of some of the practical changes in the daily lives of the workers in our nursing homes, long-term care facilities. I would gather that things are a bit different for home health nurses right now, too.
Yes, they are, Dave. So the first thing we're trying to do at the organization here at Central Vermont Home Health, and I know that all of the VNA or Vermont members are working on as well, is really trying to honor and respect the protocols that are coming down for the long-term care facilities, as well as protect our staff, their staff, and our mutual patients and their residents. So currently, we do have patients in the facilities we are providing hospice care to. So we are working with each of our facilities alongside hand-in-hand with their protocols and making sure that we're doing everything we can to follow CDC and Vermont Department of Health guidance related to infection control procedures. And really what we're looking at right now is trying to minimize to the extent possible any in-person visits that we have to do. And currently for hospice patients, it's currently primarily nursing visits that we're looking at. In addition to that, we have some clients that actually require wound care in some of the facilities that don't have nursing or minimal nursing oversight. So we're really trying to work with the facility staff and limit those visits from a nurse that's wound care certified, and then also work with the staff either telephonically or video to train them on doing the wound care to keep this person safe and to keep their wound healing, et cetera. So lots of partnering and partnership amongst our facilities and ourselves.
So in terms of my sort of picture of a home health nurse is someone who maybe, you know, picturing somebody driving along a dirt road in Vermont and stopping by a farmhouse and going and knocking on the door once a week to stop in and check vital signs on a patient and to make sure that, talk about medication management and, you know, all the other sort of things that are part of a routine service like that. And I think I'm hearing you say, if I'm getting this right, that some of that actually, you know, those visits may become what, less frequent, or do we go from once a week to once every 2 weeks, or once a month, or what?
So we still have a certain amount of regulatory guidelines in place that haven't been alleviated, but ultimately mm-hmm. we are working with our state partners as well as our regulatory partners and really trying to limit the amount of exposure and contact that we're having. So there are other ways we can provide those services to make sure we can oversee the care appropriately and then determine an essential in-person visit. So we can use the telephone and we can also use video visit capabilities. And we have several clinicians that are very well versed in doing assessments over the phone for video visits. I mean, over the video for video visit. So.
Now, quite a number of other services provided by home health. I'm thinking of just one. I know you have meetings devoted to bereavement and people gathering to talk about, you know, a recent death in the family and that sort of thing. Have those been canceled now, or how's that work?
The grief support has been canceled, although we have been providing those services using a Zoom technology. Either it can be done through video with our bereavement counselor, or it can be done by telephone. So we've been able to continue holding those for those individuals that are really in need of that support right now, especially with social isolation kind of being encouraged to a degree. We're trying to stay and have that human connection in some way, shape, or form to support these individuals and what they may be going through currently.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things here is that if you kind of envision normal life for a moment, let's roll the clock back a month or two. Certainly in my own family, and I think in many, many others, this is very typical that the older generation, I'm talking about people in their 80s and 90s now, are sort of the least internet savvy, shall we say, right?
A lot of
old folks, they're the ones who still don't have a computer in the house, and so on. That must present a challenge to your work that would not be immediately obvious to people who are working from home, who are, in their 30s or 40s now and are used to using Zoom for meetings or whatever.
Right. So I think one of the great things that has happened, though, is there is technology like an iPad. So I know a lot of I have a lot of friends that are around my age and have older parents. Some older, I'm talking 80 and older, that they bought iPads for. And I know my mom had one when she was, I bought her one when she was in Rhode Island and actually had a stroke and was bedbound, and I wanted to be able to FaceTime her and see her. And so with my brother's assistance, although for her, I taught her how to use it, and it was pretty straightforward. So there are ways that we haven't thought of that actually our older population is adopting and able to use. On that note, there are those that, like you said, don't have that internet connection and don't really want to go there and don't want to deal with a computer or iPad or a tablet, etc.
Right.
And so based on that, we have to do what we have to do, and that's one of our goals as a home health and hospice agency, is to be able to provide some of those essential visits for those individuals that really need us to have some form of eyes on them.
Very, very fascinating. And let me go to Jill Baza Olson. Jill, the formal name of your group is what exactly now?
It's the VNAs of Vermont.
VNAs of Vermont. And you are the executive director. I used to see you around the statehouse a lot when I was there as a reporter for the AP.
Yes.
You were working for the hospital and health systems association here in Vermont, and I just wonder, a lot of what I would suspect that you do as a sort of routine part of your job is to talk with state officials representing the visiting nurse associations. About various types of regulation and about various what the state is imposing on you and expecting on your industry and so on. Are there any issues right now that come to the fore for you as things which you wish the state would either step up or back off, or any changes that you'd like to see from state government? And let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay. Well, let me just take a step back. So I think you've characterized what associations do pretty well, but I want to add to it a little bit more. So our job, first of all, is to convene our members. And so for our members, so all of those home health and hospice agencies, a big part of my role is making sure that they are able to talk to each other, share information with each other, and really just help think through the challenges that they face. So that's our role during normal times, and it's also our role during this crisis. And I would say that's probably the most important thing we're doing. Weeding through all of the information, there's lots of information coming at us now, federal information, state information, information related to telehealth or reimbursement, so much information. A big part of my job is to collect that information and make sure that the people in our association are seeing what they need to see so that they can respond appropriately to the guidance.
Let me just stop you there and interject a question. What have been the most common questions you've been getting from your members over the past week?
You know, I think members are concerned about the things you're hearing about in the media. They want to make sure that they understand when they're supposed to be taking care of folks. So we just got guidance yesterday about essential visits, and I think you heard Sandy talking about that, trying to figure out which type of visits that can be done now, maybe telephonically or by some other means. But we don't really have a way right now to have reimbursement for those visits, so making sure we can continue to pay the staff to do the work. So there's a lot of questions about that. How do we change the way we do our business, and then also make sure that we're able to make payroll? So that's always the challenge, and that's what we've talked about with our state officials about quite a bit. We've been working on a bill in the with the legislature, even as they've not been convening in the building, and we've been talking a lot with state officials who control the Medicaid dollars as well as our national partners to make sure that the healthcare system has what it needs to survive this crisis. And so that's a big part of my role, because that's an advocate. I want folks like Sandy to be able to focus on taking care of patients in her community, and then my job is to make sure that her organization has what it needs to do that. So that's really what we're doing through this crisis.
All right. I believe we have a caller on the line. Is it Bill from Barrie?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, what do you do? There's lots of people who are home living, elderly people and younger people, who are in hospice, but they also need to be taken care of basically 24/7, and that's up to the elderly spouse or maybe a child who is also working and can't take care of them all the time. But they need somebody there taking care of them 24/7. And this has been happening, and those people already don't get all the help they need. With this crisis going on, I don't know what can happen, but this is a problem that's very, very serious.
Mm-hmm. Bill, that's a really good question, and I guess I'll start with Sandy Rouse on this and ask you, Sandy, in normal times, we have many families in Vermont where, you do have someone who's often aged and very infirm and needs a lot of care, and oftentimes gets the care from other family members. Any changes happening there or need to be happening? What should family members who are providing that care be thinking about? Any special supports they can rely on now? Talk to us a little bit about all that.
Right. So, currently, there hasn't been any changes because we're just trying to sift through the guidance that we receive to care for those individuals on service and try to provide them with everything they need. Most of the patients that we care for, most of the clients we care for, do have to have an emergency contact and someone who can kind of support that caregiving. In the sense of a crisis, what we're doing is we're working with our local partners. I'm in touch with Central Vermont Medical Center, and not only their hospital team, but as well as their provider team, their doctors, et cetera, to mm-hmm. understand the needs. We also have a whole host of social agencies out there. I am part of a group called Thrive. It's our accountable community for health, which includes organizations such as the Council on Aging, Capstone, Vermont Food Bank, the Department of Health, representatives from all many, many more social service agencies. And what we're trying to do is put together some shape or form of a command center and really all work together to find out what those needs are. I would recommend to anyone that has needs, such as Bill, you're referencing, in the sense of if There's more support that's needed in the home, especially for those that have caregivers such as their children who have to continue to go to work, that you call 211. And there are lots of resources out there that can be put together. I think one of the challenges is with the coronavirus, really trying to limit some of that contact and avoid spreading it. But certainly if support is needed, there are resources that are coming together to try to figure that out. And certainly as home health and hospice staff, we are considered essential workers. So that's why we're working with our state partners to determine if our staff need to be redeployed to do other things, et cetera.
Can I say something more?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely, Bill. Go ahead.
Okay. There are LNAs that come out and stay with these people, sometimes for several hours, because they need to. They give them baths. They feed them. They do all kinds of things. There are some people who are ill, but who also have orthopedic problems and need wheelchairs, and not only wheelchairs, but need these, to be helped with gait belts and stuff like that. And the spouse alone or a single person can't help it. It usually takes two people to do some of these things to help people up and in and out of beds and stuff. And they have to be with them. So here's the thing. We have a virus coming that will kill people, but these people need the same amount of nurses to come and take care of them. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. I just wonder personal care assistants are key players in the process of keeping people in a good place as they age and in their homes, and that's something you can't deliver by Skype or Zoom or whatever. What should we be thinking about that kind of thing, Sandy?
Right. So our personal care attendants are still going out into the home. And we are, like I said, working with our case managers and other social agencies that are involved. I know the Council on Aging also case manages quite a few of those clients. And we're really looking to make sure that they get the care they need, especially if they need personal care and support in the home. We want to make sure they have food and the ability to prepare it and all of that. So our goal is ultimately to, those are considered essential services, and to really work, and those things that are essential do need to be done in person. So once again, kind of going back to what I was originally talking about, you know, what are those things that we really need to determine do need to be done in person versus virtually or just to keep things going by phone.
Jill Miles Olson, I'm sorry, go ahead, Sandy. What was that?
It was Jill. I wanted to just add to what Sandy said.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So one of the things that we worked on with the administration as a coalition, really, of healthcare providers before the executive order came out was to really emphasize how important it was going to be to have childcare for our workforce, for those personal care attendants, for our nurses. And that's, of course, true across the system. And so we were really grateful when the governor, when he did his executive order to close schools, making it clear that we still needed to figure out a way to have that child care. So that's an example of how, on the policy side, we work to try to support our member agencies. And it's really something we did in a coalition with all the other healthcare provider groups who are providing essential services.
Yeah, Jill, let me ask you a question. You mentioned about just the sort of business aspects and keeping up payroll and this sort of thing a few moments ago. I mean, is there any chance when I hear about a reduction in the number of home visits, for instance, maybe doing things more telephonically or so on, is there any chance that there may be some layoffs or some curtailment of hours or anything like that among staff at your agencies?
So, you know, it's an evolving situation, and I think what's happening is that every agency is looking at what's essential and also knowing that we may have workforce shortages if even as people, you know, perhaps even need to be in isolation for a while if there's any chance that they've had an exposure. So I think everyone is trying to figure out how to best use all of the folks that they have to do this. But there are going to be, for a while, some services that we probably won't be able to provide or that don't make sense to provide in this during this crisis. And the situation is really changing every day.
Are there possibilities of sort of redeployments of some key personnel? I mean, I think of, I'm hearing that in some of our hospitals, the ancillary practices, some of them are being told they need to be at least prepared. I don't know if anybody's actually made the move yet, but some of them are being told they need to be prepared for possible redeployments from a type of healthcare that maybe, let's take a dermatology office just as one example. There's something where the general patient flow coming through is not coming on an emergency basis. So you might take the nurse who normally works in the dermatology office and say, go work over here in some other part of the healthcare system, more, responding to the crisis at hand. Any talk of that happening in the home healthcare realm?
I haven't heard about that specifically, but we provide, I would say, a less broad array of services than a hospital might. Tell you this, it's an all hands on deck situation across the state for sure. And, home health, people who work for home health are problem solvers who are focused on making sure that people get what they need. And that they've always been that way. And I think in a crisis, we're going to just see more of that kind of spirit as this goes forward.
Yeah. And I got to say, despite all my history as an allegedly objective reporter and all that from years ago, I'm allowed to express a little more opinion these days on talk radio. And I got to tell you, big kudos to your folks. I mean, my hat's off to all the people working in these fields right now, because I just feel like I'm hearing this all across the broad spectrum of healthcare right now, that as much as it is, there's this kind of universal attitude there of we're going to do what's needed. Now it's just sort of we're really going to do what's needed. And I think that is that's what's needed. So there you go.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
This is Sandy. Another reason for us working so collaboratively with our partners, especially our regional provider partners here, like Central Vermont Medical Center and their practices and physician providers, et cetera, is really to figure out how we can all work together. So if, right now, like Jill said, all hands on deck to manage active patients and referrals that really need to be seen and need essential care under the home health benefit, but also being in conversation with them on a regular basis to make sure as things kind of change, if there is the ability for some redeployment and assistance somewhere else, that we are coming together to try to provide that and meet those needs.
How are your, Sandy, let me ask you this, how are your staff doing? I mean, obviously this has got to be, it's scary times for all of us, but I would imagine that as much as there's this, real practical attitude we just talked about, there's also folks who were having the normal range of human emotions and vulnerabilities and so on. Are they hanging in there pretty well emotionally and so on?
Right. I think it's everybody in general is beyond the organization is a bit in high anxiety and high emotional state just because things are changing so rapidly. And there's a lot of media focus, et cetera, which can kind of snowball out of control a bit at times. But ultimately, what we're trying to focus on is how do we protect ourselves in the sense of reviewing infection control procedures, making sure staff have what they need. We're screening patients on every visit, so asking them really pertinent, specific questions for any new admissions. We're working with hospital new admissions. We're working, we have a nurse liaison at the hospital. We're having daily afternoon huddle calls with a team with her to really understand the new admissions that are coming through and making sure all the screenings are done. We have our managers that are doing welcome calls for our patients the night before.
Well,
we have to see them and all of that. Really trying to get.
I hate to interrupt, but we are just about out of time. Sandy Rouse of Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice, Jill Mazza Olson of the VNAs of Vermont. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. A great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. Top of the hour news break for CBS News.